It is hour number two of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Coming up at 1:45, where are we at in society? Sam Pika will tell us. At 1:30, we are speaking with Bryce Weiler, who is the disability consultant for the Baltimore Orioles, also co-founder of the Beautiful Lives Project. And in mere minutes, it's Joe Cook of Inside Texas. I'm Trey Elling. Sam Pika is behind the glass. That's because Chad Hastings is out today. Another week of vacation for Mr. Hastings. That makes 12 and 16 for him. Three-fourths of the summer he is now taken off with this week counted as well. No problem, though. Got plenty of great things scheduled. Coming up at 2 o'clock, actor Robert Patrick, guy who played T-1000 in Terminator 2. He joins me. Actually recorded that conversation on Friday. It's a really good one you don't want to miss. And coming up Thursday at 2 o'clock, it is Oliver Stone. Thursday at 2 o'clock, Oliver Stone. Yes, that Oliver Stone. No, I'm not kidding you. Plenty of other really cool things happening throughout the course of this week. I think I'm going to be getting Jeff Ward back in studio with me to co-host 1 hour this week. That may happen as soon as tomorrow, so stay tuned for all of that. Right now, though, let's go to the Vaqueros hotline and welcome our buddy Joe Cook to the program. Of course, covers all sports Longhorn-related for Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com. And you can give him a follow on Twitter at JosephCook89. Joe, thank you as always for the time. How you doing today?
Doing great, Trey. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. So before we get into the nitty-gritty of the Longhorns starting fall practices and a big commitment picked up over the weekend, what are your current thoughts on the possibility of college football being played in any capacity this fall?
You know, I've always been pretty optimistic in a lot of different things I do, and this being one of them. But, you know, with the news of the past few days, it's harder and harder for me to be optimistic, especially as it looks like we're approaching a zero hour with all these different university presidents and leadership meeting and determining the fate of it. So I don't want to put a percentage on it, but I mean, it used to fluctuate constantly, and now it's just been on a downward trend over the past few days after, you know, an upward trend about this time last week. So, I wish I had better news and a better grasp, but unfortunately I don't.
Considering the likelihood that the Big Ten and Pac-12 both cancel their fall seasons for not just football but all sports in the next day or two, what do you think the path forward is for the Big 12 if they try to play games next month?
I think they're going to have to figure out who's going to be there with them. I think that seems to be the line being drawn amid all of this, because it looks as if the Pac-12 and the Big Ten have made their decision or are leaning toward a certain decision, and the SEC and the ACC seem to be leaning in a separate direction. So I guess the Big 12 is about to become a swing vote. Man, that's a odd place for it to be in the power dynamic of college football at this point in time. But I think that kind of is the situation because, you know, what they do will dictate what the majority is.
Well, if college football does happen this year, then the last couple of days will be fairly profound for Longhorn fans. That's because fall practice did get going in place of a lack of spring practice a couple months ago. Really the first time these guys have been able to get on the field together since all the coaching changes were made. Of course, some new faces on the roster as well. What were your initial takeaways from the first day of practice, according to the post-practice presser with Tom Herman on Friday?
You could just tell that all these, the players, the coaches, just from what Herman was saying, you could tell that, you know, they had been looking forward to that day for a long time. And Tom Herman often talks about, hey, if we're planning for something more than 14 to 17 days out, we're kind of wasting our time here because things change so rapidly. So you could tell for that day to finally get here and to finally happen, something they had all been looking forward to so much, it was a real positive for the program. And I think you could also tell, he mentioned about how these assistant coaches, one of the seven new hires that he made, it was their first opportunity to really coach those guys on the field. Remember, they didn't get those spring practices. So there's just a lot of excitement about being able to have something mostly look like its normal self and for it to have finally gotten there on that Friday.
If there is any news that comes out of the first day of a fall practice, usually it's a guy who either tweaks something or is not quite 100% heading into the first fall days. And apparently that is the case for Jordan Whittington right now. Suffered an injury within the last month or so, and he's still not quite up to speed just yet. Is he starting to turn into one of those cases of a guy who we'll always have high hopes of, but perhaps he never exceeds those expectations?
You know, I don't know if you can give that to him just yet because while these injuries are nagging, they're not like severe ACL injuries or, you know, breaking a leg or something like that. This is something that just turned into something lingering there because those are just major things that just happen. And these, you know, he went from having his groin to his whatever the part of the body that Tom Herman repeated over and over last year. That he got fixed surgically. Now it's just soft tissue, so it doesn't seem like it's related. Now, that doesn't mean he hasn't been a little injury prone in his time at Texas, but I don't think he'll be one of those guys, and I think it'll trend toward the opposite, where we're thankful for Jordan Whittington's time at Texas and not looking back on it with what could have been.
The linebacker position is obviously one of the biggest questions entering fall camp. Have things changed in terms of how you see the depth chart shaking out? Starters and backups, beginning with Juwan Mitchell on the inside and DeMarvion Overshown on the outside?
I think that's what ends up being the starting duo if we ever get to a first game, just because I think that's what the best combination is. Yes, DeMarvion Overshown is learning the position, and it's going to be a lot different for him. And Juwan Mitchell is going to look a little bit different after slimming down from last season to this year. But I think those are your best options. And trust me, this is from someone who's a huge believer in the abilities of both Marcus Tillman and David Benda. I think those guys are going to do well. I think they'll do extremely well in their career at Texas, but at least for 2020, I don't think they'll be better linebackers than Juwan Mitchell and DeMarvion Overshown. The good thing about Juwan Mitchell is, you know, he's got experience playing this type of role, at least from the last couple stops he's been. And you need some experience in that middle of the field in every defense, no matter whether it's at safety or linebacker, somewhere in the middle, you need some experience there to help kind of direct traffic. And he's valuable there for that. Plus, he's a good player. And I think he'll also be able to direct DeMarvion Overshown a little bit in helping him learn that Will linebacker position.
You think Deli Adeoye makes an impact this year, or is he starting to get surpassed by too many newcomers?
You know, I think Deli Adeoye can still be a good linebacker, but I think that there are guys, I think it's just like you mentioned, I think there could be some guys who pass him up. And the thing with Deli is he's not as versatile as some of the other guys. I could see Juwan Mitchell playing, you know, Mike or Will. I could see David Benda playing Mike or Will, but I just see Deli Adeoye in that one Mike spot. And I think there are guys who are more versatile and who also will be able to show a little bit more as far as athleticism in that spot in Deli.
Speaking with Joe Cook of Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com. Joe, by all accounts, at least early on, the offense is looking really good under Mike Yurcich. Seems like they're going with a little bit more tempo. Obviously, getting Sam back for his senior year is a big deal. For those who maybe aren't aware just yet, what changes are expected with Mike Yurcich calling plays for the Longhorns this year?
Well, I think you have to start at the top with it means Tom Herman's not calling plays, and that allows him to, you know, as he said, maybe have his hand a little bit in some other areas in the program. But as far as on the field goes, I think you'll see more emphasis on trying to get the outside receivers open. Tom Herman's offense has done a great job of getting the H wide receiver into space and making plays there, whereas the outside receivers under that philosophy have basically just been told, hey, go make plays one-on-one. Try and beat this guy, and even if you're covered, you're going to have to make some plays one-on-one. Not as good as getting the H into space. I think you're going to see these outside receivers get into a little bit more space, which does include going and running a fly route down the field, getting into that space, and, you know, trying to go downfield on the outside a little bit more often. So I think that's what you'll see. You'll see wide receivers schemed open a little bit better on the outside, and you know, Tom Herman will still make sure that H is a big part, especially with the talent that they have there.
Longhorns have picked up a couple of commitments for the class of 2021 since the last time we spoke. Let's start on the offensive line with Mike Mislinski. What can Longhorn fans expect out of him?
They could probably expect a future center, and that's fine. Every program needs to be able to find and identify guys who can play that role. And Texas has done that for at least the past few cycles. Going back with Jake Majors last year. But Mike Mislinski, he's a football pedigree. His dad, I believe, works for the Jaguars. Family members who all played college football at the D1 level. And you're getting a real good athlete, good football athlete, 6'2", just under 6'3", just under 290 pounds, and a guy will end up being a center. And another commit needed for Herb Hand in this class, and you just got to have one guy who can play center, and Texas has at least a few of those guys on the roster now after landing in the past few cycles. So fits a need and fits it very well.
And Mislinski was the first of two Florida recruits to commit to the Longhorns last week. Mislinski is out of Jacksonville. And then they also got Jaden Alexis, a 5'11", 180-pound speedster from Pompano Beach, Florida. Four-star wide receivers are never a bad thing to add to a class, but it sounds like this dude has serious game-breaking ability.
Yeah, he definitely has that, and that's with his speed. And this is a good pickup by Andre Coleman on the recruiting trail. Still trying to find some guys in Texas, but if you can find speed like that in Florida, especially with a player like Alexis, you have to go get it. And this is a guy who is going to do great things on the field and off the field. Apparently his class president also has some NFL pedigree. His father, I believe, played in the league for several years. So just a guy who really does check all the boxes on and off the field, culture fit, and hopefully one of the guys who gets open pretty quickly downfield in that Mike Yurcich offense I was talking about.
Joe, you're obviously a fan of Houston pro sports teams. Wanted to ask you about the Rockets and the Astros. We'll start with baseball, where my terrible Texas Rangers actually had a pretty good weekend. Your Astros had a bad weekend versus the Oakland A's. Are you resigned at this point, considering some of the injuries that have been dealt to your pitching staff, that just making the postseason this year is a pretty good bar to try and clear if you're Houston?
I think so, and that's also because of how easily attainable that bar should be. The A's are looking more and more like the class of the division this year because they're healthy and have their guys. The Astros, I know Round Rock's not playing, but it's basically the Round Rock Astros out in the bullpen. These are guys that have, they are on their way towards setting the club record for most major league debuts in a season, and that's with a 60-game season. So I think that, yeah, that has to be the bar, and that's just because it's so easily attainable. You really just have to hold off the Angels, and then you're in the playoffs, and hopefully the lineup gets you there. The Calvary kind of should be coming soon with Jose Urquidy probably sliding back into a rotation spot, but how long is it going to take for him to get work back up? Yordan Alvarez is going to come back soon, hopefully. He's scrimmaging in Corpus Christi as well. So it may just turn into a team where the Astros have to constantly outscore opponents just because they can't really do much with their pitching staff. There's some promise on that staff. But they're all rookies. They're all first-year guys, and it's going to show over and over and over, as it has in the past few weeks.
You think once it's all said and done, Justin Verlander is shut down for the year?
I do. I think they are trying to get better news, kind of like everybody else is with the college football world. I did find it a little peculiar that only one outlet has come out and said that it is season ending. That's a far ledge to go off of, but it's one that they've stood by. And so far, it seems like the Chronicles, they haven't been wrong yet. And of course, Dusty Baker, I think he said yesterday that things weren't looking good for Verlander right now. So I think he threw his last pitch in 2020, unfortunately. I hope I'm wrong, but just the rational thought behind it makes me think he's not going to throw again this year.
And regarding the NBA and your Houston Rockets, do you think the small ball strategy can get them far in the postseason when that begins in the next couple weeks?
I think it'll get them past the first round. I think it'll win them a playoff series just because that's kind of what they tend to get toward in the playoffs anyway, especially towards crunch time over the past few years. I think they would go small and go that route and take Capella off the floor. Maybe had to do with something to do with Capella's foul shooting, but still, it's something they know what they are doing when they do that. I think they can get past. I think they can get past a first round opponent, but once they run into a team like the Clippers or the Lakers, who are, or even I don't even know who else, maybe the Nuggets are in that category. But once they get to a team like that, that has A, skilled big men, or B, mismatches at multiple positions, it's going to be tough for that Rocket system to work unless they go on a three-point shooting heater the likes have never been seen. So maybe I'll hold out for that. That'll be an exciting way to watch basketball, and I think these past couple weeks have shown that the offense still works when you have Russell Westbrook playing, playing center, basically, and James Harden still being James Harden. So I want to see it happen. I really am excited for it. I'm glad we're going to get see it tested out in the playoffs. But we need the Rockets need Eric Gordon back to make sure that it looks the right way.
All right, I'm going to preface this final question, Joe, where I put you on the spot with a tweet from Bruce Feldman of The Athletic, who is responding to reports of Iowa, Michigan, Nebraska, and Ohio State exploring a potential move to the Big 12. Feldman says a source at one of those schools just told me, quote, that would be news to us. At the end of this week, I think we will know one way or the other what the SEC, ACC, and Big 12 will at least try to do. What is your prediction on what the Big 12 is trying to do by the weekend?
Oof. Man, I think they're going to try, and I wouldn't be surprised if there's an additional derail somewhere down the road. That's just my personal opinion. I think they're going to try and go forward with it. I don't know if that'll help them make it to game one, but I think they're going to try and go forward with it as if there was going to be a game one, and we'll see how far it goes until they meet a stopping point.
He is Joe Cook of Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com. Give him a follow on Twitter at JosephCook89. And also check him out on the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast channel. It's a 1-0 podcast that he does with the Horn's very own Brad Kellner. Joe, thank you as always for the time. Have a great rest of the week.
Thank you, Trey.
Got it. All right, there he is. And yes, if you have missed the latest from the world of college football, we have reports now that the Big Ten has, in fact, voted 12-2 to postpone the fall sports season, football included, until the spring. We now have reports disputing that. Michigan and Ohio State players are coming out with the hashtag, We Want to Play. Jim Harbaugh has actually come out with a statement trying to cite the reasons why it would be healthier for a football season in the fall versus waiting for the spring. This whole thing is utter chaos right now. And that's amongst conferences that actually have their ish together a little bit more than the Big 12 does. Interesting report from Bruce Feldman, though, that the Big 12 is trying to, at least for this year, trying to snatch up a couple of the more talented Big 10 schools to expand this idea of what would perhaps end up being a conference-only season, where you just go ahead and scrap the cupcake on the schedule. That's kind of a ridiculous idea. If that's the option, and I understand it gets you ready for when the games actually matter, but let's not even waste our time with that. If this is that strenuous a scenario, we're not going to be allowing fans in the seats, which I also think is how things play out if we do have a fall sports season. But the Big 12 doesn't know what they're going to do right now. Again, reporting what we talked about last hour from Matt Mosley and Pete Thamel, the Big 12 is split on what they need to do. And there is a line of thinking that they're going to wait to see how the SEC and ACC respond to all of this and also see about a potential partnership for those three Power Five conferences to try and do something together. And in a way, it would be a shell of a season, especially without the Big Ten. You can figure out a way to talk Ohio State and Michigan to the Big 12. Maybe you get Penn State to the ACC. Maybe you move West Virginia over to the ACC for a year, since regionally that makes a little bit more sense for them. Perhaps there is hope after all. We will continue keeping you updated throughout the course of the afternoon on everything happening in college football. This is a massive week for the future of the sport, the immediate and long-term future as well. I'm Trey Elling. This is Shirts and Skins. Chad Hastings is on vacation. Coming up next, we speak with Bryce Weiler. He is the disability consultant for the Baltimore Orioles. We'll find out more about what that job entails, as well as his fantastic nonprofit, the Beautiful Lives Project. That's up next here on The Horn. Back here on Shirts and Skins, Chad Hastings is on vacation. Hey, join the Positive Coaching Alliance of Central Texas and Mark Henry Strong Kids for the third annual Reclaiming Youth Sports event. Exercise your mind and body with an all-star cast. The third annual event will virtually allow athletes, coaches, and parents to work out with some of your favorite celebrities. Special guest announcements coming soon. Space is limited, so get more info and sign up now at hornfm.com. All right, let's go back to the Vaqueros hotline now and welcome Bryce Weiler to the show. Bryce is the co-founder of the Beautiful Lives Project and disability consultant for the Baltimore Orioles. Bryce, thank you for the time. How are you doing today?
Thank you so much, Trey, for having me on.
Sure thing, Bryce. So for those who don't know, you are blind. Are you legally blind? Are you fully blind? And how did this condition happen to you?
I am totally blind. I was born 4 months premature. And when I was born, due to too much light or too much oxygen, when I was in the hospital, the doctors are not sure which it was that caused the retinas in my eyes to detach, which caused me to be blind. When I was growing up, I could see light and shadows, not enough to really tell what a person looked like, but to tell if I was coming close to a wall or if I was close to a door that was closed. But as I've gotten older, I cannot see whether or not there was a light turned on or if it is off, and I cannot see shadows as much either.
So, Bryce, you grew up in Claremont, Illinois. Was listening to sports a big part of your childhood?
Listening to sports was very important to me whenever I was growing up, and it's still very important to me now because listening to sports on the radio is how I am able to understand what is going on during a baseball game or during any sporting event. When I was growing up, I listened to Brian Barnhart commentating Fighting Illini football and basketball, to Don Fisher commentating Indiana Hoosiers football and basketball, as well as Mike Shannon commentating for the St. Louis Cardinals, Pat Hughes doing Chicago Cubs games. And those four broadcasters really brought vivid pictures into my head of the games happening on the court or the field.
You attended college at Evansville, and you got to go through a pretty cool experience during your 4 years at Evansville. What was that?
When I was in college, the former Evansville head men's basketball coach, Marty Simmons, gave me the opportunity to sit on his Aces men's basketball bench. Sitting on the Evansville basketball bench really changed my life because it gave me the opportunity to be around players and coaches and to experience college basketball. Those were all things that I dreamed about doing in my life, but things that I never knew if I would be able to have that opportunity to take part in, since I cannot see. And being able to have such a fantastic experience with Coach Simmons and his Aces players and coaches led me later in life to want to give back to help people of all disabilities to be able to live their dreams.
And pretty incredibly, you also got to broadcast sporting events while in college, baseball, basketball, soccer. How do you go about understanding how to do play-by-play for games when obviously you can't see what's happening on the field of play?
I do not do the play-by-play role since I cannot see what is happening. I actually study the style of the play-by-play broadcaster that I am commentating with to determine his style or her style. I will read facts on the players and the coaches. If I'm doing basketball, I will go out and shoot free throws on the court before the game to figure out if the rim is loose or tight, and then to figure out how the ball is actually going to bounce off the rim. If I am commentating baseball or softball, I will ensure there's a good crowd microphone by home plate so I can hear the sound of the ball hitting the catcher's glove or the umpire calling the pitch a ball or a strike. So if I'm making a point, I can say what has happened, and the play-by-play broadcaster does not have to come in and to call the pitch or to say that the free throw had been made. And I also speak to a coach from each team to learn the offensive and the defensive styles of play for both teams.
Very interesting. So you end up graduating from Evansville in 2014 with a sports management and sports broadcasting degrees. You end up going to get your master's in sports administration in May of 2016. And shortly after that, or maybe around the time of that graduation with your master's, you befriend John Angelos, who is a major part of the Baltimore Orioles. How did you initially meet him, and what did this meeting turn into in terms of a job for you with Baltimore?
I met John through contacting him and just explaining to him how sitting on the Evansville men's basketball bench had changed my life and how I wanted to be able to help people of all disabilities to be able to live their dreams and to be able to experience sports and to work to make stadiums more accessible for people of all disabilities. Since June of 2016, I have been Baltimore's disability consultant, and I've done such things as helping them ensure that Camden Yards, as well as the Oriole Spring Training Stadium, are accessible for fans of all disabilities. When the Orioles became the first team in sports to wear Braille on their jerseys during a September 18th home game in 2018 against the Toronto Blue Jays, I helped the 150 patrons who were visually impaired or blind who came to that game through ensuring that the staff knew how to properly guide and assist people who are visually impaired or blind. I also put all of the food menus into Braille, both contracted format and the uncontracted format, for the food stands where the patrons who are visually impaired or blind were sitting in the left field seats, and I ensured that their guide dogs had a place to use the bathroom as well as drink water, because it was a hot day in Baltimore that day in September. And last year, before two Orioles home games, we gave fans of all disabilities the opportunity to play on the field with the players and coaches, and that was a great experience, giving fans of all disabilities the opportunity to be able to play on the great field at Camden Yards with some of their favorite Orioles players and some of the Orioles coaches as well.
Who's your favorite Orioles player, Bryce?
I don't really have a favorite player on any team. I just enjoy listening to games.
That's fair. Speaking with Bryce Weiler, he is the disability consultant for the Baltimore Orioles, also co-founder of the Beautiful Lives Project. You can find out more about this fantastic organization at beautifullives.org or by continuing to listen to us right now, because I did want to ask you about the Beautiful Lives Project, Bryce. When did it get going, and what is the goal of the Beautiful Lives Project?
The Beautiful Lives Project started in May of 2017 when I contacted the owner of the New Britain Bees baseball team, Anthony Iacovone, and I told Anthony about sitting on the Evansville basketball bench, and just like with Baltimore, how I wanted to give people the opportunity to experience programs in sports across the country, being able to play on the court or the field with sports teams, such as being able to play on the court or the field with a high school basketball team, a high school softball team, soccer team, baseball, football. We could also do these same programs at the college level with college teams as well as other teams, pro sports teams. And after doing sports programs up till January of 2018, we expanded to do programs to give people of all disabilities the opportunity to be able to do programs in music, where people of all disabilities can learn how to sing or play musical instruments, or people can learn how to perform with a cheerleading or a dance team, or people can learn how to do arts and crafts, as well as other programs. We have chapter presidents all across the country who help do these programs to make the lives of people of all disabilities be as fantastic as possible. Our closest chapter to you would be Stacy Apple, who is the Dallas chapter president. We're always looking for more chapter presidents. People can contact us through our website, which is www.beautifullives.org. People can also donate on the website, and all of the funds raised goes to help set up more chapters across the country and to purchase items for the various programs that need to be purchased, such as a special beat baseball so that people who are blind can experience playing baseball. People can also call me if they would like at 669-BLP-HOPE, 669 BLP Hope, and they could follow me on Twitter at Bryce Weiler at BryceWeiler.
And you guys were going to set another record in terms of people helped in 2020 before the craziness of COVID derailed all of our lives, which is really cool. But since then, you have actually started to formulate some online programs to help folks out too as well. What do those consist of?
Those consist of virtual programs where people can come on and talk about some of the obstacles and challenges that they are facing in their lives. And we also are working to set up programs to help veterans of all groups who have any disability to be able to live their dreams, because we want to thank all of the veterans for their service to our country and to help veterans who have disabilities to be able to live their best life possible. One of the most important things of the programs that we do, whether it's in-person programs or in 2018, we served over 3,000 people of all disabilities, helping them to live their dreams, or on the virtual program side, is we want to create long-lasting friendships that can help people to be able to live their dreams, to break down barriers and eradicate stereotypes. Because whenever someone is blind, visually impaired, having autism, in a wheelchair, they also need friends to help them to overcome obstacles, to overcome people who doubt that someone can do something because he or she might be blind. I've had to face some of that in my life, and I know friends have really helped me be successful. And we also do these programs for people who are of any age and any disability. The programs are not just for children, which is something that a lot of people think, that would not be fair just to segment our programs just to children, because everybody should have the opportunity to live their dreams, no matter if they're 8 or 83.
He is Bryce Weiler, the disability consultant for the Baltimore Orioles and co-founder of the Beautiful Lives Project. Bryce, tell the people one more time how they can either find out more information or get in touch with you directly.
They can go to our website, which is www.beautifullives.org. They can call me at 669-BLP-HOPE, 669-BLP-HOPE. They could also follow me on Twitter at Bryce Weiler at BryceWeiler.
Bryce, thank you so much for the time today. Keep up this awesome effort.
Thank you so much, Trey, for giving me the opportunity to share about what we do to make dreams come true.
Coming up, Sam Pica leads us through Where Are We At in Society. You're listening to Shirts and Skins with Trey and Chad on Vacay on the Horn. Back here on Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Chad Hastings on vacation. Quick programming reminder coming up just before the top of the hour. It's my conversation with actor Robert Patrick. He of Terminator 2 fame. We get into a lot of different things inside and outside his career, and he tells some really cool stories as well. This is going to be well worth your time. Stay tuned just before the top of the hour. Right now, because it is 1:45, it's time for Where We At in Society.
Where are we at in society today?
Sam Pica helping out all week long because Chad has taken another week of vacation. I've put you in charge of Crap Bag and Where Are We At. What do you got for us today in this particular segment, sir?
We got a little bit of Am I the A-hole today, Trey.
Love it.
You were picking out some mask holes earlier. Now we're picking out some A-holes. Hmm. That sounded better in my head.
May-holes. Like,
yeah, there you go. all right, so our first perspective A-hole. I am a 47-year-old male who's been saving for my daughter, who is an 18-year-old college, who's an 18-year-old female, her college education ever since she was born. I don't feel comfortable disclosing the exact amount, but it was enough to send her to a good university, buy all her supplies, etc. My wife and I have both went to college, and we were expecting our daughter to go as well. So as you can imagine, our disappointment when she told us she wasn't going. However, we respected her wishes and didn't make a big deal out of it. The day after she told us she wasn't going to college, I bought a boat. My wife and I have been wanting one for years, and so I finally bought it. It cleared most of our daughter's college fund, and we put the rest into savings. A few days passed, and we hadn't told anyone about it, but my mother-in-law was hosting a small family barbecue, in accordance with our state safety regulations, of course, and it eventually came up in conversation. My daughter was there, and she asked where we had gotten the money for the boat. So we came clean and answered, and she absolutely lost it. She said that she had changed her mind and was going to announce it today, but now she can't even go because we already spent the money.
Mm.
Are we the a-holes?
Yes, you are.
Really?
Yep.
I don't know, man. I feel kind of like, I mean, it's their money, and she said she wasn't going to use it. That's what they saved it for.
Ultimately, it is their money, but you got to give teenagers time to really process everything. And just because somebody doesn't necessarily want to go to college one day, they may change their mind. I would have held off on that at least 6 months, if not a little bit longer. But here's the other reason why I think that they were the a-holes in this situation. Say you're saving up for your kids to go to college, but your kids don't want to go to college. Maybe they're not the college type, or maybe they see a value in exploring something else throughout their late teens and early 20s. Perhaps the money can help them out with that.
So you're going to send them off with money to travel or something, is what you're saying?
I'm saying that that time in a person's life is transformative, but it doesn't always necessarily require that form of higher education. There are other higher educations that you can get. No pun not intended there. I'm not talking about that form of higher education. But there are other ways for you to educate yourself while also evolving into an adult that doesn't necessarily require you to pay tens of thousands of dollars to an institution that is operating on a business model. Because let's get this clear right now, as if we're not seeing this in college athletics right now. Colleges are businesses. And for a lot of people, if you're not planning on going through, I don't know, graduate school, perhaps getting your PhD, that undergrad degree is not worth nearly as much as it was even 10 or 20 years ago. So if you've saved a certain amount up, just get it in your heads. And my wife and I have already had this conversation, that there's a chance that some of this goes towards school, but some of this might help our son or daughter to maybe see a little bit of the world or get to experience some things that they might not have otherwise.
See, I'm totally with these parents, man. I'd have gone boat right away. I think it's funny even how quick it was with it being the next day, because that's exactly what I would have done. Oh, not going? I would have spent it in the hour, Trey.
Even if you do decide to spend the money, and look, obviously, it is their money to spend. They saved up the tens of thousands of dollars, I'm assuming. I don't know how much a boat costs. Boats cost as much as new cars,
oh,
right?
Probably more,
$30,000, $40,000, $50,000.
Yeah, something like.
So, yes, that is your money. And if you want to spend it like that because you were dead set on only spending that for their college education, so be it. But the fact that you turned around and spent it that quickly, I don't know. Maybe it says something about the daughter. Maybe it says something about how little faith they had in their daughter actually making it through 4 to 5 years of college.
She said she wasn't going to go. That's... You're
yeah,
done.
She
you're
did.
Done at that point.
But give a kid a chance to like really ponder that. If you're the parents and you want her to go to school, have a conversation with her and say, look, we're going to give you a chance to make a final answer like a week from now. So let's talk about this a little bit and allow you to sit on it while we also consider the possibility of which boat we're going to buy with the $50,000 that we have in an account that was earmarked for your college education but now is ours to spend.
But then it's no fair, because you know, once she starts seeing the boat catalogs laying around and everything and she knows it's going to be real, of course she's going to go back on it. Of course she's going to say she wants to go to school.
Yeah, that's true.
See? That's
although college is just going to end up being community college in the same city that she grew up in, so that she has access to the boat on weekends with her friends.
There you go. It's a plus for her, too. These guys are not a-holes, man.
All right, Sam. Thank you for today's edition of Am I the A-Hole? We're going to break a little bit early because my conversation with Robert Patrick goes longer than the allotted 20 to 25 minutes. That's because it was that good. So you should stay tuned for that. Coming up next, this is Shirts and Skins, with no Chad Hastings today. I am Trey Elling, and this is The Horn.